Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host. I will be escorting you, as it is my privilege to do, around the battle space of the war for the free world. And we're going to have a full panoply of superb guests on this program, starting with Mark Thiessen, a former senior member of the White House staff, a speechwriter to President Bush, also speechwriter to Secretary of Defense Don Rumsfeld, a man who wrote speeches and caught spears for Jesse Helms in the United States Senate, and who has, since he left public service, contributed immensely to our understanding of some of the real challenges we're facing at the moment, including through a terrific book, Courting Disaster, How the CIA Kept America Safe and How Barack Obama is Inviting the Next Attack. And Mark, I guess in a way that's where I'd like to pick up. We have in the news today the president announcing with some fanfare that he's not only going to be eviscerating our national security capabilities, he's going to be shredding our national security strategy. I wonder if you think this might be inviting the next attack.
Well, it's certainly dangerous. I mean, look, and to be honest with you, Republicans are in part to blame for this. We went along with a lot of these cuts. I mean, the Obama administration in its first 2 years in office, when it had control of the House and Senate, passed about $350 billion in defense cuts. And then as part of the budget deal, they added on about $1 billion onto that, between the first round of cuts and then when the super committee failed. So we're looking at, $1.3 trillion with a T in defense cuts that the Republicans helped him put in place. We cannot be a superpower with that kind of level of spending, and so the Obama administration, understandably, has come up with a strategy that for us to be not a superpower anymore, to fit our strategy into our budget as opposed to our budget, instead of building our budget around our strategy. And that's a disaster for our national security.
Well, that's the real point, is that unfortunately everybody else's threats aren't tailored now to our reduced strategy or budget. And Mark Thiessen, as you look around the world, I know you have been, following this closely, both in public life and now as a commentator in numerous publications, including your column in the Washington Post. Give us a sense of the enemy's perception of all of this. Maybe we could start with the Taliban. You've written a piece about the character that apparently the Obama administration is prepared to spring to lubricate our negotiations with these guys. But what's your reading of how the Taliban is, as an example of enemies, taking all this aboard?
Well, the Taliban is only one, but I mean, we're engaged in combat with the Taliban, and we are sending the message to the enemy, both through the budget decisions they're making and the rhetoric, that we can't wait to get out of Afghanistan. And, we want to do nation building here at home. And we want to withdraw our troops. And so what that does is that emboldens the enemy. And now the Obama administration is actually planning to enter into Paris peace talks. I guess they're going to be a Doha peace talk.
Doha, round, as they say.
With the Taliban, and they are actually, I mean, this is just insanity. They are actually talking about, not in exchange for any Taliban concessions, but as a confidence building measure. Why do we need to build confidence with the Taliban? Releasing senior Taliban leaders who are detained in Guantanamo Bay. If there's not a sign of weakness in doing that, I can't imagine what it is.
Yeah, just to drill down on that for a moment, Mark Thiessen, let's talk a little bit about this fellow Mullah Mohammed Fazl that you've written about as an example of the kinds of guys that they're proposing to spring gratuitously. I don't know if this is principally driven by the idea that, well, it'll just mean there are that fewer people in Guantanamo or what, but tell us about this cat and what the prospects are if he's actually on the loose again.
Well, he's a mass murderer. This man was the Taliban's deputy minister of defense, chief of staff of the Taliban army. He was involved in drug trafficking. He's a war criminal who massacred literally thousands of innocent Shia and is wanted by the United Nations as a war criminal for trial for this. He had very close relationships with Al Qaeda and other extremist groups. And in fact, this guy is so senior within the Taliban that he actually once threatened the Taliban leader Mullah Omar, who's the supreme leader of the Taliban, when he wanted to disarm one of his deputies, saying, "If you disarm my deputy, I will disarm you." You got to be pretty senior in the Taliban hierarchy to talk to Mullah Omar that way. And he is, you know, I'm no fan of WikiLeaks, but they released last year something called the Gitmo files, which were the military assessments of all of these individuals. And I went through his Gitmo file. I mean, he is in our military. And I'll give you a direct quote. "Detainee is assessed to be a high risk, as he is likely to pose a threat to U.S. interests and allies if he is released. If released, detainee would likely rejoin the Taliban, establish ties with anti-coalition militias, participating in hostilities against U.S. and coalition forces in Afghanistan." So this is a guy who is going to go back to the battle, and he's one of their top commanders. If you release a guy like this, this is taken as a sign of weakness, and you're putting a dangerous mass murderer back out on the street. It's crazy.
Yeah, and not least, sending a very powerful signal to our so-called friends in Afghanistan that the weak horse is not one they want to be stuck riding. These circumstances, you're turning a guy loose who will go back to killing them. I'm sure that's going to make things even more problematic there. Mark Thiessen, let me turn to another set of issues that I know you have been concerned about throughout your time in Congress and Secretary of Defense Rumsfeld's staff and, of course, in the White House. And that is the defense capabilities of this country are being shredded, as we said earlier, but a really gripping example that seems to have caught everybody by surprise is the shutdown of a plant in Kansas, where everyone expected there was going to be a lot of work going forward, and suddenly all those, they're not shovel-ready jobs, they were jobs that highly skilled people were doing tremendously important work at. They're over the side now. There's more in the offing as a result of all this. What is your sense of where we are in terms of not just the men and women on uniform on the front end, the pointy end of the spear, as they say, but the kit that they're going to need to rely on to be competitive, to safeguard us in the future?
Oh, it's a disaster. Look, well, first of all, I mean, there's the hypocrisy of it. I mean, here's the Obama administration at $1 trillion stimulus, loves government jobs and shovel-ready projects, except when they involve national defense. And, you know, so Obama, who's trying to turn around the economy, is directly responsible for shutting down a Boeing plant with thousands of workers. I
mean, high-paying jobs.
You know, it's an economic disaster. But, you know, of course, the left loves government jobs, except when they involve the primary responsibility under the Constitution is providing for the national defense.
Yeah.
But putting aside the jobs issue, we are going to decimate the military. I mean, if we cut $1.3 trillion out of our defense budget, we will not. I mean, the strategy reportedly that Panetta is going to come out with today concedes that we can't fight two wars, so there's two major simultaneous conflicts at the same time. You know, we've obviously just had to do that. But what happens if we get involved in it? With the danger of that is, what happens if we get involved in a conflict that's not of our choosing? Like, if North Korea does something and we have to fight them, then that means that any other enemy knows that now's the time to strike if you want to do something and America's tied down.
You bet.
So it sends a signal of weakness to the entire world and creates opportunities for some of the world's worst actors to engage in mischief that would be devastating to our national security.
Yeah, I don't know if this is one of your lines or not, but your old boss famously said weakness is provocative, and we're going to put this to the test again. Mark, we've only got a minute left. We're speaking once again with Mark Thiessen, now with the American Enterprise Institute and columnist for the Washington Times. You took off after one of those Republicans recently, Ron Paul. What is your view of the Paul strategy and its implications in the mix here?
I will make a radical statement for you. Barack Obama is a more responsible commander-in-chief than Ron Paul would be.
Certainly calibrates it.
Well, you know what? Ron Paul came out a few weeks ago against the killing of Osama bin Laden, and came out for a very odd reason. He said because it violated international international law. Since when do libertarians care about international law and interfering with our primary, if you're a constitutional conservative, provide for the common defense protecting us against an enemy who attacked us on September 11, 2001 and killed 3,000 people in our midst? I mean, this is a man, his position is that sanctions on Iran, not just military action, but sanctions on Iran are an act of war. 9/11 attack that flew planes into the Twin Towers and the worst attack on our country since Pearl Harbor is a crime.
Yep.
That's how nutty this man's views are.
Well, we'll look forward to more of this psychoanalysis with you, Mark Thiessen. Thanks for joining us today, and keep up the terrific work you're doing at the American Enterprise Institute and with your books and so on. We look forward to visiting with you again early and often in 2012. Next up, Supna Zaidi of the Lawfare Project will talk with us about what's going on with this judge in India who says that Google and Facebook can't carry content that gives offense to Muslims. What's it mean for you and the rest of us? Straight ahead.
I was able to lose the 80 pounds I gained due to pregnancy. It was pretty easy to eat whatever I wanted and not think about it.
The Meta System from Judy Singer has been helping make weight loss easier for a quarter century.
My husband's grandmother used it 20 years ago to lose weight for a wedding and said it was the only way to go.
The Meta System also has an excellent support staff.
They were very supportive. The first time that I ordered the product, they called me and suggested that I order a lower dosage to begin with. They didn't want me to jump the gun right off the bat, and it was nice to know that they actually cared.
And the weight loss is so dramatic, people wonder.
With the Meta System, I've got many questions about how I managed raising a baby and working full-time and lose the weight and eat whatever I wanted.
People who use it recommend it.
I suggested the Meta System to my mother, and she has lost 30 pounds.
Learn more about weight loss with Judy Singer's The Meta System by calling 800-711-JUDY, 800-711-JUDY. The Meta System from Judy Singer, the powerful all-natural way to lose weight, 800-711-JUDY.
The first step in winning a war is to know whom you're fighting. 9 years after 9/11, the U.S. security establishment has failed to tell us. The very words we need to describe the war are being outlawed. We went from the war on terror under Bush to the war on man-made disasters under Obama. Neither identifies the threat doctrine behind the aggression, Islamic Sharia law. That's why the Center for Security Policy assembled Team B, an independent group of national security professionals, including Bill Clinton's Director of Central Intelligence, James Woolsey. The result is a book that challenges the assumptions of the current administration and exposes the supremacist nature of Sharia and the jihad its adherents are obliged to engage in. This report names the names of those responsible and makes plain the mortal peril now posed to America's Constitution, our national security, and way of life. For more information, visit ShariaTheThreat.com or order your copy of Sharia, The Threat to America at Amazon.com.
Congress doesn't have a budget for 2011, but the GOP has proposed a budget for 2012, and Bill Bennett likes it.
Maybe it helps to have that 2012 in the background, people hearing and seeing Ryan and the Republicans saying they're serious about really cutting the budget.
As a backdrop
to this debate about 2011, people make the decision, well, Republicans seem much more serious about this.
Bill Bennett's Morning in America, weekday mornings from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New choice, intelligent talk.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We are joined by Supna Zaidi, a new guest to Secure Freedom Radio, and I'm sorry about that because she's a fascinating woman who has a lot to say, and I'm looking forward to making up for lost time. Supna, Happy New Year to you, and welcome. We're glad to have you with us. From the Lawfare Project, with Brooke Goldstein, a colleague of ours who has just written a terrific new book about the issue that we want to be visiting with you about, at least in part, namely Lawfare, and give us just a very quick reminder as to how you define that and what you're doing about it at the project to try to help ensure that we don't have our freedoms stripped from us.
Hi, Frank. Thank you for having me on the show. The Lawfare Project focuses on
fighting against litigation and the general use of the legal system in different societies by people who want to censor and silence any activist or any individual who's trying to fight for the basic tenets that we want to defend in the United States, that what we would call, you know, constitutional rights or liberal, classic liberalism, or just human rights principles. And lawfare is a growing trend around the world, not only in the United States, because it is the nonviolent way to fight in the courts what is happening in very diverse ways, like the Israel-Palestine conflict in the Middle East, or now in India. There is this lawsuit in Delhi where the courts are now telling companies like Google and Facebook that they should be removing all offensive material with regard to religion, even if there is no damages shown.
Yeah. And Supna, give us a sense, to the best you can, of how this is likely to work. Who's going to decide whether the content is offensive, and will this apply only to Google and Facebook in their Indian, you know, clientele, or will it be worldwide?
Well, right now, I think the problem that companies like Facebook and Google are going to have is because they're U.S. companies, and also Twitter, their sense of free speech is really based on our Western notions of free speech, and their content provider contracts with different countries like India come up against other societies that don't have as sophisticated laws and policies on these matters. So specifically with regard to India, what happened was there was a Delhi court that came out, I believe last month, and told 22 internet providers, such as Google, Facebook, Twitter, that they should remove all content that was considered offensive to any quote-unquote normal human being. But then further to that, it was specifically mentioning apparently in the complaint images of Hindu gods and Mecca, things that would offend the average Hindu and Muslim in India, but they failed to really have specific enough information of what was considered offensive, why it was offended, and how there was any real harm that was created by it. Instead, it focused on very generic and overbroad language, such as protecting the sensibilities of Indians. So what's going to happen is, while the court has told these companies that they have until February 6th to file compliance reports that they have removed offensive material, these companies, I think, are going to have a very, very difficult time in terms of determining what is offensive, how to remove it, and what kind of policies they want to create that are forward-looking that could maintain a legal relationship as providers in the subcontinent of over a billion people. What's most likely is these companies are going to fight back with the government and say that, you know, there's no way for us to provide the service that you need, number one, and for us to not open ourselves up to a crazy amount of litigation, because what is offensive is going to be, as you stated, potentially lawfare, as much as sincere hurt and damages that could be, you know, for one in every 100 person, or one in every billion person.
Right.
So I think...
every normal person, that is.
Exactly. So, I mean, the good thing is this is creating a lot of back and forth conversation in the media. There is a minister named Kapil Sabal. He's India's communication and technology minister. He's really behind this. And there is a Twitter site already that has a hashtag, Idiot Kapil Sabal, and it's trending really well because the average public response is highly critical.
Well, I wonder if that will offend him and be a source of a new litigation or other kind of action.
Absolutely.
Supna, let me ask you this. And again, we're speaking with Supna Zaidi of the Lawfare Project. What relationship, if any, as you see it, does this kind of activity in India have to what we've been witnessing going on in Washington and Istanbul and I guess shortly in Europe in this so-called Istanbul process of the Organization of Islamic Cooperation? Tell us a little bit about that process, and then if you can, stitch this together if you think there is a connection.
Okay, I do believe there's a connection, and it's basically paving what would have been a separate free speech issue in India, but bringing it to what the OIC is doing. And for your listeners, the OIC is the Organization of Islamic Cooperation, and it is a body of about 50 to 57 Muslim-majority countries that have come together as a bloc, and they sit in the UN, and most often they try to vote they align their votes on matters important to them as a group, since on their charter they say they are representing the Muslim community globally, so transnationally. So with regard to free speech, what has been happening for over the past 10 years is the OIC has been attempting to pass resolutions in the UN to censor free speech with regard to what they initially called defamation against Islam, but then broadened it over the years to defamation against religion and then, you know, free expression. And it's become more and more vague, but in its increase in vagueness, it has also simultaneously increased its enforceability, apparently. So most recently, before Christmas, there was a conference in D.C. hosted by the State Department and some of these OIC member countries to see how they can now enforce the goals of this defamation against religion resolution that was passed in March 2011 in the UN. The issue with this is that it is one thing to, you know, I have concern and respect for how we talk about religion in society and in the public sphere. It is another thing to completely try to suppress a contesting opinion that others may have with regard to political movements that may have a religious tinge and automatically call it hate speech or often used phrase Islamophobia, when it is legitimate debated content that needs to be talked about because it affects everyone, not only Muslims, but non-Muslims as well. And this is where the difficulty comes in, that if I, for example, like since you bring up Turkey, if its political party is an Islamist political party, meaning that it has a very strong theocratic element to its interpretation of democracy, if I want to, you know, criticize something that they're doing, like throwing journalists into jail, am I being an Islamophobe?
Well, in the eyes of all those normal people in the Turkish government, I'm sure the answer is yes. And that's what's so troubling, is that this is really in the eyes of that beholder.
Exactly. And if I write an article as a Turkish journalist criticizing the AKP and its connections to its, you know, Islamist interpretation of the Quran, do I have a right to be thrown in jail, as the Turkish government has been doing dramatically in the last year? That is lawfare. And so with India, sorry to go back to the main issue, what happens with this court case is that if the Indian government decides that they will in the future, based on this type of court case, create laws that makes it an offense to insult or offend people's, you know, emotions with regard to their faith, it's going to pave the way for lawfare the way blasphemy laws already do in the Middle East and Pakistan especially. I can hate my neighbor and then allege tomorrow that he or she has said something against Muhammad or Islam and get that person thrown in jail.
Right, or worse, actually killed.
Well, they usually get killed before they get to the jail.
Yeah, that's right.
At least in Pakistan.
Justice is delivered before the verdict is rendered.
So it's that manipulation of the legal system.
Well, listen, what you're doing about this at the Lawfare Project, in terms of, you know, helping to illuminate the phenomenon of lawfare, Zubna Zaida, is of tremendous importance, I think. And I commend you and your boss, Brooke Goldstein, for the new book on lawfare and the insights that we've taken from it, as well as the great work that you're doing more generally. Keep it up, please, and come back to us, especially as this case in India wins its way through this process. We're going to need your explication of it for sure. Thanks again so much for joining us, and come back to us again often in 2012. And Happy New Year to you. Next up, we will have Fred Grandy joining us for two segments of our roundtable. Straight ahead.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Hey, parents. Finding it hard to communicate with kids in today's world of ever-changing slang?
Hi, son.
Excuse me?
Introducing the Communicizer. Just strap non-toxic Communicizer to your mouth and go from boring old man speak.
Oh, you know, I'm here if you want to talk.
To 100% off the chain.
Text me whenever, yo.
It's that easy.
Thanks to Communicizer, I'm relevant to my kids again. I mean, A fly, boo.
And now when you buy Communicizer, you get the auto-tune attachment free. Sounds so hip-hop, your kids will want to talk to you for hours.
I used to have to walk 3 miles uphill to school every morning, shorty.
I love you, Dad.
I love you too, son.
Communicizer is not available in stores because it doesn't exist. But that's okay. You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Because kids in foster care don't need perfection. They need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUsKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
For decades, the Democratic Republic of Congo has endured economic collapse, poverty, and war. More than 3.5 million people have died in the conflict. Today, rebel forces continue to wreak havoc in the eastern Kivu provinces. The International Rescue Committee estimates that 30,000 children have been recruited as soldiers, and thousands more have lost their parents. Most of these children lack the most basic level of goods, security, and most especially, clean drinking water. Yet, there is a well of hope coming to eastern Congo in a village called Uvira. Washington, D.C.'s National Community Church is partnering with Global Outreach to bring a water pipeline to the Congo for Christ compound, an orphanage for children who have lost their parents to war and AIDS. Building a clean water source will sustain the school, provide for the children, and hundreds more in the village. Go to www.waterforcongo.com. Learn about the work of Global Outreach and give. You can be part of the community in Uvira, and like a well, you can be a source of hope in life. www.waterforcongo.com.
Hi, I'm Drew Brees, NFL quarterback for the New Orleans Saints, here with Bugs Bunny to remind you to get moving every day.
Because when you get moving an hour a day,
you fuel your body and your mind.
So what do you like to throw around the football like Drew?
Skateboard.
Play frisbee in the park.
Ride a bike.
Kick the soccer ball around.
Or dance in your room.
Just move it your way.
Because nothing makes you feel better than moving every day.
And that makes you part of a winning team.
So be a player.
You'll have more energy to do the things you like to do.
Move it your way and be a player.
Get up and play an hour a day, Doc. Check out how to be a player at letsmove.gov.
Head online to get tips on great ways to get moving every day.
That's right, at letsmove.gov. Let's hear that one more time, Doc. That's www.letsmove.gov. A message from the Ad Council and HHS.
I'll pick you up after school. Okay, I got it.
It's easy to take a day for granted. You and your family are connected by routine, and you stick to it. But what if a disaster strikes without warning? What if life as you know it has completely turned on its head? What if your day's routine is disrupted and you can't reach your family? Have you planned for that? Before a disaster turns your family's world upside down, it's up to you to be ready. Get a kit, make a plan, be informed today. Learn how at www.ready.gov. Ready.gov. This message brought to you by the Federal Emergency Management Agency and the Ad Council.
You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
We're back, and with us is our regular feature now at Secure Freedom Radio, Fred Grandy, a star of literally stage and screen, as well as a distinguished former member of Congress, a man who has really gone to school in a way that few of us had, about the ways of Washington, both as an insider and subsequently as a very, very highly acclaimed talk radio show host. So he's teaching me a lot, and it's always a pleasure to have you with us. Happy New Year to Fred. Great to be with you again.
Well, it's nice to be back. As you know, I've just made a return from that foreign principality known as the state of Iowa, where I'm from.
Yes, indeed.
And I guess I can report at this point, if this is a victory for Mitt Romney, I'm not sure I know what a defeat looks like. I mean, Rick Santorum obviously came out of nowhere to come within, I think, almost official winning distance. And really what I'm seeing right now, and this ties into, I think, Center for Security Policy Initiatives, Frank, it looks to me like there is going to be, if not Rick Santorum, if not Newt Gingrich, some type of attempt by a conservative wing of the Republican Party and conservatives in general to stop what appears to be a Republican version of Barack Obama, which is what Mitt Romney appeared to be when he was in Iowa. And
you saw him there while you were on the ground and had a chance to, or at least get the flavor of the kind of things he was saying and responses. That's a pretty strong accusation, given that Iowa, after all, is a fairly conservative place.
Iowa's a fairly conservative place, but it's also a fairly it's a fairly isolationist place. That's why Ron Paul played so well. But it's an interesting amalgam of socialism, republicanism, and Yankee independence, because obviously you've got a lot of people there who are very worried about U.S. foreign intervention, but a lot of that is tied to whether or not it will reduce the price of grain. And the other side of that is they're very dependent on federal programs because of farm programs and the huge number of senior citizens. So it's a dicey political area, particularly for people in the GOP. But what I didn't hear, except from people like Rick Santorum and Newt Gingrich, was a real alarm call for what is happening around the world, and particularly in the Middle East. And you have only to go back to the debates and hear Mitt Romney essentially say, well, I don't think under my regime Iran will get a nuclear weapon, but let's not speak ill of the Palestinians. I mean, this is a guy who seems to be alternatively clueless and supposedly tough about Middle East policy. And I don't know, based on what you and I know with the work that we do, how that is going to translate into full leadership authority in hopefully a Republican administration.
Yeah. Well, this does bear considerable watching, needless to say, Fred Grandy. Let's drill down on somebody you mentioned a moment ago and how he fared. It was certainly less well in the polls than we had anticipated, namely Ron Paul. Why was that, given, as you say, the resonance some of his positioning seems to have with your former constituents?
Well, as far as Ron Paul is concerned, I think there's a certain ceiling to his support, and a lot of his talent and a lot of his support was imported. There are kids attending school in Iowa who were home for the holidays and not back in time, so that when it finally came to caucus night, a lot of those people were AWOL.
Fred, if I could just interrupt you, is it also true that under the voting rules in this caucus state, you were able to come in and be a Republican for a day?
For a couple of hours. You don't even have to spend 24 hours in the Republican Party. You can walk in, sign in at a little table, and essentially be, for the next 2 hours of a caucus, a Republican in good standing. And that's exactly what happened. If you look at some of the outgoing poll data, that's exactly where a lot of the Paul support came from. It came from independents who are temporary Republicans and now have probably gone back to their independent status. But I think that one of the things
I don't want to distract you from this main theme here, but just you're a professional, not professional, but a guy who spent some serious time in political office. You know your way around Iowa. You know your way around, you know, this kind of electoral process. Why does anybody let this happen? What do they think is going to come out of a primary or a caucus arrangement whereby people can just wander in and cast ballots that may determine or at least shape who real Republicans wind up having to choose as their nominee?
You know, Frank, that is a question you need to address to the grand mullahs of the Republican Party, because you can also register. Independents can vote in the New Hampshire primary, and they can register and vote in the South Carolina primary. So you have to ask yourself, is this a Republican primary at all? And if it is, what does it mean to be a Republican? I'm not sure the Democrats are quite this forgiving and inclusive.
Adult is the word that comes to my mind.
Well, I would support that. I mean, I don't quite understand it myself. I think part of it is to allow as many people who are interested in the process to be included, but you do have to ask yourself, if the party means anything at all, why would you necessarily just open the gates less than 10 minutes before a party meeting and say, you guys that are not Republicans, you come in and join us as well? What does that say to the people who have been Republicans their
That's
whole
right.
life?
That's right. It's like jumping the line in the immigration rolls. All right, so conclude your thought on Ron Paul, and then we'll move on.
Well, I think that Ron Paul is probably now looking to become a broker at the convention. And I think if he succeeds in that, his main contribution will be to talk seriously about fiscal and monetary policy and perhaps change some platforms regarding the Federal Reserve at the GOP convention. I don't think anything he says about foreign policy, whether he calls himself a non-interventionist or we call him an isolationist, will get anywhere near a Republican platform, because he does not represent, I think, mainstream conservative pro-defense views, and I don't think that will prevail. So I don't consider him a threat. I'll tell you what I am worried about in terms of this next election, Frank. I am worried that the conservative element that is trying to oppose Mitt Romney will continue to fight among themselves and make it easier for him to win, and we will perform the same kind of defeating task we did in 96 with Bob Dole, or unfortunately with John McCain in 2008.
Yeah, we've definitely seen this movie before, and it does
we
not
sure
have a happy
yeah,
ending.
It does not.
Let me ask you this. Speaking of, you know, sort of mainstream thinking in the Republican Party about national security, a subject we focus on, as you know so well, Fred Grandy, here each week, day in, day out. Do you sense that there is any thinking going on in the Republican Party about national security? I mean, look, let's face it. We've just witnessed what I believe is going to be seen with the perspective of history as one of the most dramatic and potentially cataclysmic changes in the power structure of a vital part of the world.
Absolutely.
And there's hardly been any focused attention paid to it at all in these debates, or for that matter, as best I can tell, on the hustings in the Republican ranks, or in Congress for that matter. Give us a quick, we're going to have to take a break here in a moment, but just a minute on what you're thinking is going on.
Preciously little. I mean, if I were Iran or the Islamist forces that are about to take over Egypt, I would say, you know, we may not have to worry about the United States because they don't seem to be worried about us. And I find that, I mean, again, people like Santorum and Gingrich have issued an alarm, but those questions don't come up that much. They don't come up that much on the stump. The media is not asking those questions. So to some degree, we are victims of our own neglect, and this plays right into the present administration's hand because it makes them look like they're honest brokers in a peace process that has nothing to do with peace.
Right. And this is an issue that I want to come back to you on, Fred Grandy. We talked a little bit about it with Mark Thiessen in the first segment, and there's a lot to cover here. Let's get into a more serious drill down on what Congress is going to have to do about this if there is to be some level-headed thinking going on in the Republican ranks. And more to the point, if in response to what the president's doing today at the Pentagon, we're to have a strategy for our security going forward. We'll have all of that and more with the Honorable Fred Grandy right after this. Stay tuned.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
I went from a size 18 down to a size 5, and I was able to keep it off.
Angie had some serious challenges.
I had gone through a divorce and put on quite a bit of weight. There was an accident where I was put on a lot of medications, and I put on over 60 pounds. I tried every kind of diet, but diets just did not work.
Diets don't work is something they hear a lot over at the Meta System from Judy Singer.
I heard heard about Judy Singer's Meta System, and I thought, well, you know, couldn't hurt to call. And I called them up, and they told me all about the product, and I thought, well, I'll give it a try. From the first week that I was on it, I wasn't hungry a lot, and it was just amazing. Jumping about 3 months ahead, I dropped 63 pounds.
If you're ready for a natural product that cleanses your system and helps you lose fat, talk to a Judy Singer counselor about the Meta System. Call 1-800-711-JUDY. 1-800-711-JUDY. The Meta System from Judy Singer. Powerful, all-natural weight loss. 1-800-711-JUDY.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
I have held the same mirror for 13 years.
I have been decorated with purple dinosaurs, baseball teams, and football helmets.
I have witnessed 33 Thanksgiving dinners and one wedding proposal.
I have tiny notches marking the growth of three children.
I have caused a learning disability.
I am the reason that a fifth grader simply can't sit still.
I am responsible for a five-year-old's rage.
Just because you can't see lead paint doesn't mean it's not on walls, doors, windows, and sills. Today, lead paint poisoning affects over 1 million children. If your home was built before 1978, your family could be at risk. Let's make all kids lead-free kids. Log on to leadfreekids.org or call 800-424-LEAD.
I am the reason a child has trouble hearing.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
Brought to you by the Coalition to End Childhood Lead Poisoning, EPA, HUD, and the Ad Council.
Is Nancy Pelosi looking to a higher power to get a balanced budget? Hugh Hewitt sets her straight.
When I hear you speak about this issue, of course, it's the Gospel of Matthew. When I was hungry, you gave me to eat and listen to
I just got to stop here. Nancy Pelosi quoting the Gospel of Matthew, as though that's got anything to do with the government. Let me just tell you, it doesn't.
Can I get an amen?
The Hugh Hewitt Show, weeknights from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New choice, intelligent talk.
If you're a veteran of Iraq or Afghanistan, like me, coming home can be harder than expected. I felt a little out of place, but it turns out I wasn't alone.
At IAVA.org, there's a free online community of thousands of OIF and OEF vets who've got your back here, just like they did over there. So now, I'm never alone. I can get the resources I need and talk to tons of people who understand where I'm coming from.
Whether it's navigating the GI Bill,
or VA hospitals,
managing the transition home, or meeting people you can share stories with,
you'll find it at IAVA.org.
Even if it's just everyday stuff,
like getting tips on where to find a nice sweater for my dog.
Did he just say
sweater?
That?
Really?
What?
Okay, maybe not that, but everything else. No matter where you are, Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America is there for you. Join our community at IAVA.org.
We've got your back.
Brought to you by Iraq Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We're back with Fred Grandy, my colleague at the Center for Security Policy, one of our senior fellows and a fabulous guest as well as co-host here at Secure Freedom Radio. And we're delighted to have you with us, Fred. Before the break, we were talking a little bit about what your former colleagues on Capitol Hill can do, are doing, or more importantly, I guess, must do if we are to have a proper debate in which the American people are given a real choice as to what direction they want to go with respect to potentially the future security of the country as well as, you know, themselves and their children.
Well, you know, the first thing they can do, and the first thing that they can do, because Republicans, as you know, are the majority party in the U.S. House of Representatives.
So I have been told.
You wouldn't know it by some of their behavior, but here's what I would advise them to do. They wield the gavel. So if you are Buck McKeon, the chairman of the Armed Services Committee, I think you haul everybody in the Defense Department and beyond in and say, okay, just how bad are these defense cuts? And, of course, we already know that Wichita is about to shut down a major Boeing plant where they've been since 1929. That's, what, 2,100 jobs, maybe more? All right, so that's one. Then two, the Foreign Affairs Committee, chaired by Ileana Ross Lettinen of Florida, can begin to say, now just a minute, what exactly is going on at the UN where the Organization of Islamic Cooperation is actually telling us how to abridge our First Amendment rights on free speech so that if you speak ill or even criticize Islam, even with the facts, that is now a criminal offense? I mean, that discussion took place in December, and the silence was deafening. Frank, I mean, if they don't stand up on that, then you've, of course, got the Intelligence Committee asking, or should ask, Mike Rogers and his colleagues saying, now, just a minute, are you telling us that you are going to engage Yusuf Kardawi as an agent for the Americans to negotiate with the Taliban? I mean, that's like asking John Gotti to negotiate with the Department of Justice over mob rule. I mean, it is astonishing. To me, and I haven't even gotten to the Department of Homeland Security.
Yeah, well, let's go there. Let's talk a little bit about those characters, and particularly Fred Grandy. Let's talk about this training guidelines, which just makes me absolutely nuts. And do you see any sign that there's oversight coming on that question on the Hill? You might remind our audience as to what that problem is first, and then let's talk about what might be done about it.
All right. Well, as you know, the Department of Homeland Security, the Department of Justice, and even the Department of Defense, I'm sad to say, have said the new counterterrorism and counterintelligence strategy will now not include discussing any references to the word Islam, jihad, Islamic radicalism, any of the terms that the radical jihadists use themselves to define their actions. And I include people like Nidal Hassan, Faisal Sazad, the Times Square bomber, or any of the people that we have successfully and luckily trapped up to this point. Okay? But at least in Homeland Security, you have a brief glimmer of hope. We've talked, I think, a little bit about the exchange between Dan Lundgren, a senior member of that committee, and Paul Stockton, who's an underling at the Department of Defense, where Lundgren embarrassed this guy mightily by saying to him, are you telling me that we cannot use the word Islam when people like Nidal Hassan put it on their bumper stickers and call themselves a soldier of Allah? And this guy said, well, I don't think that's the right thing to do. You know, we're fighting Al-Qaeda. We're not fighting Islamic terrorism. Al-Qaeda is built on a terrorist interpretation of Islam. So,
it's not even a terrorist interpretation, as you know, Fred Grandy. It is the mainstream canonical doctrine of Sharia that these guys are acting out. And to think that I'm fond of this, you know, insight of Sun Tzu 5,000 years ago, that you cannot defeat an enemy you don't know. We're putting ourselves in a position where we're being completely blinded to the nature of the enemy and therefore making our defeat inevitable, I fear. Do you see Pete King, one of your former colleagues on Capitol Hill, a congressman of considerable courage, chairman of the Homeland Security Committee, strapping on hearings that take a hard look at this, building on, if nothing else, Dan Lundgren's interrogatories with this fellow Paul Stockton?
I think so, but I think they're going to need pushes from organizations like ours and others that are trying to, wave the red flag while the administration is waving the white flag. And, let's be mindful. This is an election year, Frank. There are a lot of guys who are saying, I don't want to look like I hate Muslims in an election year. So it's going to be a very big uphill battle. But unless we try and scale this mountain, I think we'll all come crashing down.
Yeah. Well, I think that's really the point, is these guys have got to demonstrate that they're earning their pay up there. And I think it is imperative that that all of us, not just in organizations like the Center for Security Policy, but everybody listening to this program, and for that, Americans more generally, be asking themselves and asking their elected representatives, what's going on here? And what are you doing to at least ensure that we know what's going on here and that you're on top of it?
And I would hope that particularly our Republican presidential hopefuls, and at this point I would single out Santorum and Gingrich, will continue to ask those questions and saying, are we really serious about creating a national security policy that is a variation on Obama's bow to Prince Abdullah? I mean, now we're essentially prostrating ourselves. This is a supine foreign policy.
Let me ask you specifically on that question, something we talked about with Mark Thiessen, but I'd like to get your view on it, Fred Grandy, the Center for Security Policy. The idea of rewarding the Taliban for simply opening a political office, a mailbox that we can start having talks with or communicate through in Qatar by releasing some of their most senior and certifiably most dangerous folks who we've been blessed to have locked up for the past few years in Guantanamo Bay. Again, I'd like your view on this and your thoughts as to whether this isn't the sort of thing that would make members of Congress who've been pretty hepped up, even on the Democratic side, many of them, about Guantanamo Bay being closed, just absolutely crazed.
Well, let's just talk about the basics of this deal. It looks like this. Let's see. You give us nothing, and in return, we essentially legitimize you as a terrorist organization and give you a nice piece of real estate in downtown Qatar and essentially allow you to legitimize yourself. You know what it looks like to me? It looks like the same kinds of mistakes we made with Yasser Arafat back in the early 90s when we said, well, let's assume he's going to renounce violence. Now even Arafat went so far as to say we totally renounce terrorism. Of course, he did not. But at least he made that concession. We haven't even asked for that. This isn't a negotiation. This is essentially a concession. This is a gift, and I can't follow it.
It strikes me, and I think Mark Thiessen felt very strongly this way as well, that it's being interpreted by the enemy as not just a gift but a submission.
And of course it is.
And that's what they're all about. But again, Fred Grandy, just in terms of the thing that you have such expertise on, is this not something that perhaps it's because the Congress is out at the moment, we're not hearing more from them, but is this not something that we should expect Congress to get up on its, you know, hind legs and say, stop? For God's
sake,
certainly this
is
outrageous.
Republicans in the House. I mean, right now, the only line of defense are the Republicans in the House. I don't expect John Kerry, the chairman of the Foreign Relations Committee in the Senate, to pick up on that. I mean,
he was drooling over these Muslim Brotherhood types in Egypt. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he's essentially been dealing with the Muslim Brotherhood in Cairo and is perfectly comfortable with legitimizing them. So I don't expect much out of him. But yes, Republicans can and must get up and say, no, absolutely not. We won't allow it. We won't fund it. And we will take every measure we have as a branch of the legislative body and stop the Department of State from doing this and the president as well. And unless they start early and stay late, I'm afraid this will just slip through the cracks.
Yeah. Can you give me a 15-second soundbite on the advisability of using Sheikh Yusuf al-Qaradawi as our interlocutor with the Taliban?
I think I can do it in less than that. It is absolute insanity. It is fundamental mental retardation on the part of the State Department, and is inexplicable.
Yeah. Well, you combine it all with the OIC meetings, the Istanbul process that we've talked about throughout the program. You combine it with this placating the Taliban. You combine it with John Kerry and the rest. It's a systemic problem, Fred Grandy, as you understand very well, and we need to redouble our own efforts on this score and hopefully get those on Capitol Hill doing their part. Fred Grandy,
it's going to be
always
a busy year for us.
It is indeed. Happy New Year to you. We look forward to visiting with you much in the course of it, and in the meantime, be very well. And I hope the rest of you will be as well, and that you'll be joining us again tomorrow, same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.